Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and this beer won't go to waste. Lands.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading our Patreon-selected book of the month, The Dark Tower 3, The Wastelands, Electric Boogaloo by Stephen King.
The more darkening.
Darker. Tower.
Harder. Faster. Stronger.
With a vengeance. Or die hard. And I'm starting with this beer. I planned on just drinking this because it's a Wednesday. But then I remembered we had to do the podcast, so I was like, fuck it, I'm going to make him an excuse. This world is all, like, fucked up, right? Like, it's like there are problems. They're not local. They're worldwide, would you say?
I would say that, yes.
So this is Worldwide Stout from Dogfish Head, but it's the Utopius Barrel Aged Edition, because it's, you know, not a utopia either, so I'm nailing it. And this is a 17.2% alcohol stout.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Good luck.
That's what happens when the wife's not home. That and open door shits. So, oh my God. That's really, really good. Now, having not had Samuel Adams Utopius in about 15 years, I can't tell you how much of that flavor I get in there, but this is really excellent. And it's not, if you're into barrel-aged stouts, it's really good without the over-the-top sweetness of the pastry stout thing. This is just malt.
But even stronger.
Yes. A man's beer. Mm. A beer that'll make you forget the face of your father and everything else.
Yeah.
So this book is the third one in the Dark Tower series. And if those made sense to you, you're doing better than I did going into this. It starts off with our posse, who the last book, I don't remember anything of, except that they fought lobsters for much of it. And there was a lobster fight. There's a lot of lobster fights. And there was a black woman.
He lives in Maine. You know, he used what is at hand. Write what you know. Lobsters.
And so the posse now, that is the gang that was assembled in the last book of Roland, the last gunslinger, or whatever the hell he is, Eddie, the guy from New York, and Susanna, the woman who just occasionally talks like a blaxploitation character for comic relief, and she has no legs. They are traveling in whatever the fuck this world is. And then they have to fight a bear.
That's how the book starts. He's a very large bear.
To fight a bear.
All right, Jimmy, why don't you tell us about what happens in this book?
A robot bear.
Because you might know.
In the last book, he went into alternate dimensions or worlds, something like that. And brought back some friends, and he's going to use these friends on his trek to the Dark Tower, which exists for plot reasons, and we don't really know why he wants to go there. He just really wants to go there. And so
he's heard they have really good apps.
But yes.
He can go to alternate dimensions.
There's a Chili's in the food court of the Dark Tower that has a really good bloomin' onion.
He went to our world, presumably, but just different times in it to pick up these characters.
Possibly our world.
Of some sort of, or at least that's what it felt like, to pick up people based on a thing in the first book, I guess it was, where somebody read tarot cards and said that you have to find the talker and the not good walker or whatever the fuck they were called.
Walking, but not for you.
Yes, these are part of his crew that is prescribed to him by destiny. That will be his companion.
With his stripper friend.
Yes.
But I felt like at the end, I mean, I don't remember the second book, and I refuse to listen to our podcast episode on it or read anything about it, because Stephen King also didn't read anything about it when he wrote this one, so why would I? I thought that was it. I thought they had assembled the posse, but then this whole book, they're like, oh, I forgot someone. There's one more person we needed.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So the drawing of the three was actually only two, and they finally get to the third one now.
This and is a bonus fourth.
Well, this is when their quartet becomes a quartet. that's a real word in this book, quartet.
Yes, that is this. It's like your dream team. I don't know. Yeah, kind of. But since these other people, even though they're from not his world, they are also. Because they've been selected by, you know, otherworldly forces for this mission, they are also got the superpower of being really good at guns, which is a fun superpower to have, I guess.
Well, the gunslinger Roland trains them to be awesome gunslingers in a matter of days, even though it took him his whole life to learn. You know, he like studied it as a child, you know, as a knight, more or less, you know, because that's what he did, that what they did in the flashback in the first book. But he teaches them how to do it in a matter of days. So
those who can do teach well.
That's the saying, yeah.
They're naturals. It was like destiny. But he teaches them by just having shooting drills and saying, think of your dad, and then they shoot things.
Oh, I fucking hate my dad. I'm going to shoot my dad.
Fuck that guy. Be disappointed in this, dad. It is a real job.
Now that they're better at shooting, they're, you know, he's got them out doing training stuff, when all of a sudden, they get attacked by a giant bear who's shitting and sneezing worms, and he's got a little satellite hat, and you're like, all right, welcome to a Stephen King book, baby, I'm in.
Yeah.
And this 70-foot bear, who's also 2,000 years old.
He's an older bear. He's experienced things.
He has experienced almost everything. The natives that we don't meet, we learn from narration, called him Mir, but that doesn't matter because that's not his name, which we also don't know. But his name is actually Shardik, which is a great name for
a bear. Yeah,
it's Shardik.
You know what? If 70-foot bear took you, you'd shard on his dick too.
Yeah. Apparently, that's also the name of the bear in a book written by the guy who did Watership Down.
Yeah, that's the sequel. The next book he wrote was called Shardik.
About a magic giant bear that was worshipped by people, yeah.
So. Making Hraka all over the goddamn place.
Hrakadik was the original name, yes.
Yeah.
So they get attacked by the bear. Normally, this bear would kill everybody easily because he's a 70-foot bear. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter at that point. But he's very old and he's very sick. He's got just tapeworms out of every orifice.
He's got tapeworms. They're intense.
He's like Oogie Boogie. It's just, yeah. Once you rip open the skin, it's all tapeworms inside. He's also senile, so that's even more fun. Because he's had a hard time being a giant bear all by himself. He's probably pretty lonely. But luckily, they shoot him in the head and he dies.
Oh, because yeah. I thought he was going to matter.
Matters for orientation, where they're like, if we're by the bear, we must be by one of the magic 12 portals, which we don't know what the portals are. Also, it turns out to just be like a bunker where spooky noises happen. They're like, well, we don't want to go into the bunker. But if we're at this bunker where one of the guardians, this bear, lives, all we have to do at that point is turn around and walk straight and follow the path of the beam. And the beam will guide you to the Dark Tower because it's in the middle of all the 12 things. So you really only need to find one and then just walk straight from there. And they're like, that's cool. That's convenient. Let's do that. Good thing this 70-foot bear stumbled upon us. And yeah, that's how the adventure begins.
In most fantasy books, you would have expected them to have to get all 12 beasts. You know,
or any video game.
A fetch quest. Yeah. He was like, oh, yes, but our portal is in another castle. And you're like, oh, fuck. I got to do another one of these.
In the whole series, luckily it's just like, actually, no, those other ones just do not fucking matter. And they're not even ever in it.
Thank God, because everything else does matter to Stephen King. But,
well,
but the mythical beasts in his universe.
The turtle that is the bear's opposite compatriot garden, that on the other side of his beam, the turtle garden.
I think you mean the bottom to his
top. He's the bottom, yes. But he's the turtle from It.
Yeah, I caught that.
The cosmic turtle who died when he choked on another universe. Because that makes sense. And there you go. But he's dead in this one. Because they're all dead. Because everything's dead. And so then they're like, let's get walking.
So they shoot the bear, especially Roland, who can't actually fire the gun, has to tell
a lobster
Eddie?
Eat his hand.
Which one? Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. But what we one of the other two, I forget which one now. Well, oh, shoot the
Eddie,
satellite
Eddie's climbing
dish.
The tree because Susanna cannot climb the tree because she's got no legs.
Right. You see, wouldn't she actually be really good at climbing the tree? Doesn't she wouldn't she have a substantial upper arm strength?
You kind of need like your legs to like hold you up, though, I imagine. Yeah, I'm not an expert tree climber. I'm from New York. So
she's
going to
save the leg-gripping powers for later when she fucks an invisible demon.
Yes.
That's when the leg power
she does.
Comes
she does do that.
That's important. I'll get that.
Anyway, they shoot the...
Oh, man, and Beer is an invisible demon that fucks us. That would have been... Oh, God damn it.
Quick, restart.
So Susanna shoots the satellite dish and it dies. But then they realize that it's like actually a giant machine that's powered by some like, you know, 2000, you know, a radioactive battery that lasts like 2000 years and stuff like that. And they're like, huh, this is like crazy technology, even though it looked like a bear. But that bear and other things in the book were also... They were like just kind of like zombies. That's like the things in this world. They're just kind of like zombies. And if zombies watch TV, what TV show do you think that they would like?
Hold on.
Probably Dead Lasso.
Oh, God damn it.
This is Dead Lasso by KCBC. It's definitely a soccer-themed thing, not a cowboy thing. Yeah, it's a Dead Lasso Fruited Sour by KCBC. And this is sour ale brewed with... cherries, raspberry, and yuzu.
Can you imagine a zombie just like, goal?
Football is death.
And it's 5.5% alcohol. Yep, and it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. He's down. He's injured. Sprains.
Anyway, so Roland then, after they like kill the bear... Roland starts telling Eddie and Susanna that he's losing his mind. And it's like, "Uh-oh, you're the only one from here. Like, what are we supposed to do?" So he's like, "I'm losing my mind and I don't know why. It's like I'm experiencing some sort of time paradox." It's like, "Oh, yeah. Okay, dude." So turns out
oh yeah, right. That
book
thing, yeah.
Right. Two. Now. When Roland goes back to 1977 New York, he accidentally saves Jake, the kid who died back in book one, because Jake was actually from 1977 or 1970, whatever, New York. And he had been pushed in front of a car and died, but yet somehow appeared...
By the man in black.
By the man in black, and yet somehow appeared in Roland's world at a gas station. I don't know how exactly that works, but...
Like you do.
Yeah, you know, happens to me every day.
Runaway kids.
That's because you have a drinking problem, mate.
Must be it, yeah. And then, so the kid had died. So Jake had died and had ended up in Roland's world. And so the kid helped hit Roland. And then Roland let him die because, you know, he's a good dude like that. And then when Roland goes back in time, or what I assume is back in time, to 1977 to, like, get the antibiotics... And more ammunition. He accidentally saves Jake, but now because he's experienced something that happened... So Jake didn't go back to Roland's world and stuff like that because now it's a time paradox. And Roland is like, "I'm losing my mind. I just don't feel right. Something is not okay." And it's like, yeah, well, that's not actually how the grandfather paradox works either. But whatever. This book doesn't make sense.
It's the grandkid paradox. He's just a child.
Basically, Roland is like, "I'm losing my mind," and then the story cuts to Jake as a kid in, like, you know, middle school in 1977, and Jake is like, "You know, I remember all this stuff about a gunslinger and saying there are more, there are more worlds than this?
There are other worlds than this one or something like that, yeah.
Well, that was
Isn't that what he said when
idea.
He let the kid fall to his doom in the first book?
That's what the kid said, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I, my other thought that I had forgotten before, and there are more beers than this. Could have been another intro. And so Jake is losing his mind because he has this feeling that every time he sees a door that he's going to open it and Roland is going to be there and it's going to be a door to the other world. But that, of course, never happens. And his teachers at school, at his like fancy prep school, are like, something is wrong with this kid. But his parents at home also are kind of absent and don't really, because his father just works all the time and he doesn't really care about stuff.
He's a rich dude who has cocaine in his desk. Stephen King was like, "Tell me more about that cocaine." It's like, that guy sounds cool. I'm going to write about him. And the kid is, he's kind of a weird, kind of outcasty kind of kid.
His dad gets him into the
fancy prep school, and it's a social climbing thing. And the kid's just kind of trying to do his thing and figure out what it's like to live in a Stephen King universe. He's like, I'm just waiting for the passage where they talk about my testicles. It's going to happen sooner or later because this is Stephen King, baby.
Yeah, probably. Actually, I think it does happen in this one, yeah.
I was just, you know, something more Stephen King happens in this. So if that did happen, it doesn't matter. Stephen Emperor wrote parts of this book. Another level. King of Kings.
So there's something about Jake. Hey, he has a dream or something like that, or a vision where he has to find the key and the rose, or those go together somehow. But yet,
what the fuck is it? Roland and the other two, when he burns the jawbone from the dead man in black, it appears the key and the rose. And they're like, the fuck is that? And he's like, that's good stuff, I guess. You better make that key, because Eddie, in addition to being a good gunslinger, is also very good at carving objects out of wood. He's a supernatural whittler.
As most New Yorkers are.
But yeah. It only appears to Eddie, and it's a secret. And he's like, I don't think I'm supposed to tell you this. This is a secret for me. And Roland's like, yeah, I speak in cryptic bullshit, too. I'll buy that.
Yeah. But Jake, in his world, he's losing his mind as well, because he's pretty sure that he died 3 weeks ago, but he didn't. So he's also very confused. And in his, you know, fever dream of a life, he wanders into a bookstore owned by characters who are important later for tangential reasons.
In this book or other books?
In this book. They're important in the subsequent books.
Oh, Jesus. Fuck.
The guy who owns the bookstore.
Comic book store guy.
Basically. And he's like, you want this book of riddles and also this book about a train? He's like, yeah, I want this book about a train because I'm a kid. And he's like, yeah, man, enjoy this train book. And then he's like, I got to go to this address. I forget why. And he's walking by.
The derelict. Oh, yeah.
It's the Magic Deli.
He finds the Magic Deli. Have you seen the pastrami they pile on this thing?
Yeah, it's magic. But it's all torn down, and there's graffiti all over it. And the graffiti mentions finding, what the fuck was it? Finding the key. And also, he sees a magic rose there, and he's like, what the fuck is that? Am I tripping balls, or is this rose just growing up out of nowhere? And it is, and it's magic, because why not? You don't see magic roses outside of delis all the time here in New York.
Well, there's somewhere nearby, there's a prince who has turned into a monster, and he's letting that rose grow until the curse is broken.
There's a rat king that was a man turned into a rat king. That's how we get those.
Absolutely. Yeah. For every rat king, there is a, you know, ethereal rose growing out of the concrete in New York City.
And you have to get a kiss from the rose.
Oh, yeah. While the song is playing, it's a very meta curse. Otherwise, your face ends up looking like seals. That's fucking the worst part of it. But, yeah. You know, this is confusing. Because, you know, this kid's back in 1977, which I forget what year this book came out, but I think it was the 80s. It was 1991. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But, you know, Odetta Walker, whatever the hell her name was, Susanna
now.
Yeah, but like, it's just so weird. Every once in a while, they're like, we need you to be a tough lady. Do you have any Detta Walker still in there? And she's like, you knows I do, honky muffa. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's what we're looking for. And you're like, why is this fucking here? And then the other guy
the answer is
like,
cocaine.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And then Eddie's from doing, you know, heroin in the 1980s. We're dealing with some time travel stuff. I can't believe this is the name of this beer. It's time travel.
I actually had some of that. I almost used it.
In the past? This is time travel stuff from Finback, which is a 8.4% alcohol double IPA. And I realize only I care which hops are in it. So I won't tell you, but they're there. And this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
This tastes...
Speaking of time travel...
Oh, should we travel sometimes to a time where I'm embarrassed?
People give us money. And in exchange for giving us money, we provide them with an outlet to vent their frustrations with the world and for us to ridicule ourselves and cause self-harm when we're not recording.
Yeah, we become their podcast whipping boys.
So this is that one, and we'd like to thank those people for supporting us, and I would say the work we do, but I'm not sure that's what this is. No.
These are the,
and the drinking we do.
The patrons
the work
of the
we put in on our organs.
So I will be thanking those people today. By the way, you can go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to be a supporter and get all sorts of stuff like exclusive content, early access to episodes. Join us for our live episodes, which are never re-aired because it's just too hard to edit them. But those are you had to be there kind of times. So you could either wait till a time paradox is created and you have a chance to go back and join them, or just become a patron now and do it. But
if you do that, we won't know. I think
but we'll like sense it. Like, this guy wasn't supposed to be here, but he is here. That's so cool.
How could both be true?
You also get to vote in our monthly poll, which selected this book. What was our theme?
Continuing a series we started.
So good job, Democracy. You picked a fucking shit book.
It could have been worse. It could have been Allegiant.
You know what? I think they picked the RFK candidate, the one that has a fucking parasite in its brain. That's what they picked.
You know, the bear did have brain parasite.
Yeah, this is the RFK book of the month.
They knew, yeah.
So we'll read. You know, you get to vote, but we get to thank those people. So let me open up the Patreon here. In no particular order, I would like to thank Jeff Aldaug. Yes, son. Avery, the Black Rabbit of Inle. Oh, and also, I, Mike, want to ask the Drunk Guys community, is it okay to bring your own lasagna to an all-male orgy? Asking for a friend. It's true. I mean, that's how you get the manicotti. The more important thing is... God damn it. The more important thing is that at the end is you make sure to squeeze all the cream out of their cannolis.
That's just good form.
Just being polite.
Carol, Catherine, CL, Colton. Oh, okay. Oh, this is a person's name. Drunk Guys Book Club, fun fact. Did you know this podcast was originally just about books? Beer only got involved to help Nate and Jimmy get through having to hear me talk every week. That's not true. Just had to help them get through the constant stress of hearing me talk about when I fucked their mothers. Derek, emotional support burrito. Frederick, oh my God, I can't fucking read all these. I hate you, Patreon, so much. Caden, Joe P, Josh. No, another person, please. In last month's Patreon poll episode, I misspoke and said the listeners had discovered my Achilles heel. I meant to say Achilles cankle. That's really good. Fuck you and your whore mother, Justin. Linda. That's really good. Linda. Oh, this is an exotic name. My pussy and my crack. Meep, Mr. Slotch, Putang Clan. Somebody get Jimmy a Benadryl. He's allergic to fun. Thanks. Thanks, person who didn't make it about me.
Steven, I hate fun.
Thick Richard III. Ween. That's right, the band. The band Ween supports us. William and Zaphod Beeblebrox. And also Jimmy Sven Ridenhard. And Anita Toluk is still in there. Look at that. Thank you, fine patrons. And thank you for helping me get just one step closer, gentlemen, to a full-on eating disorder. That is what I really needed. It's going to help. It's going to help my children grow up with a dad, maybe. If you want to join that list, you
shame
can go to patreon.com. Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a tough love. Which is what I gave your mothers. So that's patreon.com to become a supporter. Or you could help us out by just leaving a review. A good one. Every negative review, every one star, makes me eat my shame out of a box of Krispy Kreme donuts, apparently. Or you could just tell people to check out the podcast. Back to this book. Where were we? Nobody knows. When were we? We also don't know that.
Jake has been at the Magic Deli, where he found the key and the rose, and he's got his own key, in his world. Meanwhile, back in other place, land time, Eddie is carving the key with his ill-whittling skills that his dad always ridiculed him for. And his brother said, you know, if you whittle, you're definitely a homosexual. He said, no, I'm not. I refuse to whittle any longer.
I can say, ill-whittling skills is definitely an Amish mixtape.
That's a Beastie Boys album.
That was the remixed version of License to Ill. Ill. Now that they're old and one of them is dead, ill-whittling skills.
Actually ill, yeah.
He was licensed to terminally ill, actually.
Yeah. And so they're having concurrent adventures where they're like, we've got to get to where the door is in our world at the same time that Jake gets to the door in his world, so that when they open the door on both sides with the magic key, they can bring him in and get him out of the place and fix Roland's shitty brain and also Jake's shitty life because he hates it there. And also he's dead. Supposed to be dead.
He's Schrodinger's kid. He's dead and not dead.
Yeah.
And somehow Jake finds Eddie and his brother, but while they're kids, because it's 1977 and not 1985 or whatever when Eddie jumps into Roland's world or whatever year that was.
He follows Eddie to find the house he's supposed to go to, because that's what he had a dream or some shit. I forgot what it was. Do you have a dream?
Eddie had, I remember once having this weird thing at the house and I saw this kid there and they're like, what was that? And then these chapters go back and forth very quickly. Hmm. I think it's kind of meant to be disorienting and you're supposed to like, oh, they're winding their way towards each other. But Eddie remembered this thing with his brother who was an asshole and they went to a spooky house and there was a kid and I was like, what was that kid doing there? I don't remember because it was a dream and like dream logic and whatever. But now they're like in that dream and Jake is getting there to give him the key card because he worked for Zool or whatever. I am the key master.
He's got to go find the house so he can use the house and he's got to find the door there and then he's going to...
But he like doesn't know. He's like, I think it's he'll catch a word and the word will be like, that's definitely the word I'm looking for. And then he'll say it to people until they're like, did you mean, I forget what the name of it. He's like, I need to go to Avery Academy or something like that. Do you mean Avery Street or something like that happened? I forget what the actual word was. And he just keeps kind of Forrest Gumping his way towards the other parallel world. And it takes too long, but here we are.
But then in Roland's world, they discover a demon.
Oh, man.
And this is where... this is the climax of part one.
Someone climaxes, yeah.
Which I did not actually understand, but has something to do with... So this is where they're going to somehow bring Jake back into... Where Roland and...
Well, you remember from the first book, they found a magic circle, and he summoned a demon, and the demon answers his questions. This is like that, except instead of answering questions, the demon's going to fuck one of them.
Roland's like, listen, one of us has to have sex with this demon. It's like, here's the deal. If it's a guy demon,
it's going to choose, not us. So.
But you should fuck it if it's a guy one, if it's a penis demon. And if it's got a pussy, I'll hit it. But, you know, and then he very quickly touches his nose and he's like, not it. And then the demon shows up and then she has to fuck a demon.
Yes. Why? She has to fuck the demon to keep it away from Eddie.
Doesn't Susanna say something like, and what if the guy demon chooses you? He's like, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. Take one for the team, man.
I found the quote. He says, there's no time to say this in a gentle or refined way. One of us will. And then she cuts him off. One of us going to have to fuck it to keep it off Eddie. This is the sort of thing can't ever turn down a free fuck. That's what you're getting at, isn't it? And he goes, yeah, that's right.
And then it fucks her with, as she says, it's ice dick.
If she said, what if it's what if it fucks boys too? And he says, then we'll take it together.
The power of friendship.
Then we'll double team that demon. I gotta say, everything in this book took 900 years. Everything was like, and then there was a person and we had to give her their whole story. This really came out of nowhere.
Everything comes out of nowhere forever in this series. It's just like, all right, man, this is going to happen.
No,
there's a fuck demon now.
Later on, when they find the village and they learn about the Civil War where one of the armies was called the Pubes.
Oh,
that
yeah.
takes like 20 pages to introduce that concept of the Pube army. But the fuck demon, it's just like, hey, by the way, there's a fuck demon right next chapter. And you're like, wow,
perhaps
really?
He felt that since there was a fuck demon in the first book, you already get, oh, there are fuck demons. I guess here's another one.
But did it fuck him in the first book? I thought it just answered his riddles three.
I think it was vaguely sexual in nature. Demons be fucking, you know? There's nothing else
to
do.
The world's over.
Yeah. So she's fucking the demon so that Eddie can whittle faster.
I'm sorry. You got to read some of the... You know what, Nate? Can you read some?
Yeah.
I don't have the book.
Oh, or I'll say it, and then you cut, and then you can repeat it, and we'll just cut me. I really want to hear Nate say, quote, "Come on, big boy, you come on right now, run like it's your birthday." Susanna reared up on her haunches like a snake coming out of a Hindu fakir's basket. Is that how you say that word, fakir?
I think so.
Well, she wasn't faking it. Susanna had just time to sense thick and merciless masculinity.
Mm.
The way actually several women have described Guy Fieri, surprisingly. No, it's not true.
I believe it.
Or, okay, Nate, how about this one? Surely this is not too far. "Hey, big boy, where are you going? De pussy be over here." It's like Foghorn Leghorn.
I say,
the pussy be over here, son.
I want to see like an audiobook of like Foghorn Leghorn reads 50 Shades of Grey.
I do declare this pussy be fine like a mint julep on an August day. The entire time reading this book, I was really miserable and falling asleep. This chapter was my favorite thing that Stephen King maybe ever wrote. It was...
He didn't even say the word Jehubies once.
No, the monster was not into Jehubies. And it also didn't mind a distinct lack of legs.
No, those just get in the way, I guess.
It's like, oh, the pussy doobie over here. Okay.
So, long story short, they have a demon fuck festival. While in the other world, the house tries to eat Jake because it's alive. And then they open the doors, and he's like, oh, look, the door finally worked. Help, this house is going to eat me. So they get him out of there and pull him into their world.
It's some sort of
weird, much better.
It's some sort of strange time paradox foreshadowing because the monster is fucking, the demon, excuse me, is fucking her in one. And the plaster comes alive, and the other's like, oh, that's just the cum from the other dimension is turned into a person from the icicle penis.
Anything's possible. Literally anything is possible in this, so yeah.
Time travel stuff. Nate, what did you think of this passage? And how it related to late...
What is the author trying to say?
What is the super objective of this portion? I couldn't tell you.
How many times did you fap it to this? Because it took me three.
It took you three?
To be like, I got what I needed from it. I've milked this passage.
Ugh. So, yeah, now they're all together, and Roland and Jake's heads don't hurt anymore because they've undone the time paradox by getting him back alive again.
Which isn't how the grandfather paradox works. They didn't actually get him back. I mean, they didn't actually go through he didn't actually go back in time and do the things he didn't do because you know what I mean. So it still doesn't make sense. But now, that's the end of part one. Now that Jake is back, both Roland and Jake now are not like losing their minds. But now they're here in Midworld, right?
Yes.
And that was the end of part one. And now a new stupid thing starts happening where this, like, we finished that whole big thing. Now we're all together. Even though this previous book was called The Drawing of the Three. And now finally he's got the three companions.
Except.
So the second book was a lie.
Then when it starts up again, you get to finally meet the fourth member, or the fifth member, I guess, the fifth member of the group, who's a badger, a talking badger, because you're like, yeah, why not? It's a fucking talking badger. I love it. And he is
Oi?
An animal.
Oi,
I was not really paying attention, and I was like, I think it's just a mentally slow man. That's actually what I thought it was.
Oi, really? No, it's time. A fucking badger.
It's like that raccoon thing from Guardians of the Galaxy, but not sassy.
Yeah, he can't talk good, but he can talk a little bit. And he's a creature called a Billy Bumbler. That's why I have this beer. Billy.
Pretty on the nose. Mm-hmm.
Someone gave me this. I was like, oh, when am I ever going to need a beer called Billy? And I was like, actually, I really did. This is
Billy
this
Budd is a, by Herman Melville.
You bumbled into it.
I Blockade Billy right by Stephen it. King.
This is the Billy, a reissue of the Billy original 2012 recipe, but I don't know what that really means or how it's different from other ones. From Single Cut, and it's an IPA.
2012, Jesus. We were babies.
We were babies.
Except for
2012,
Nate was
yeah,
old fuck. Still.
I had so much more joie de vivre back then. I got none left now.
Somebody messaged me and they said, I forget which episode it was. I said, wow, you guys had, I think, the oldest Nate is old thing yet when you accused him of being a hunter-gatherer. I don't know where we go from there. We just started calling him like a fucking Australopithecus or something.
Nate was the star that we are made of the dust of. yeah, it's an IPA. It tastes like an IPA. It's perfectly fine. It's only 5%, so that's good because I'm very tired and hungover. So now they're on another quest. They got to keep going, following the beam, and then they got to get to the Dark Tower. So there's like, let's just start walking because it's going to take us a long fucking time because time and space don't make any sense anymore, and it
and
could take
Stephen
us.
Stephen King has no editor, so just go for it.
Just going on a journey, and when they're doing that, they meet the Billy Bumbler, and he's like, hey, I'm a dog badger. And they're like, I guess you're with us now, buddy. And he really likes the kid because he gave him a snack. And that's how dogs love you, because that's all they care about is it's food, actually. They don't care about you. No one does. Anyway, so they come across this like old run-down little town outside of this big city. They can see a big city in the distance, but it's all fucked up and destroyed because the world is over. And they're like, I guess we got to go to that city, because they kind of have a mysterious sense that they got to take a train. We're like, I don't know what the train means, but we got to find the train.
It's because the kid read a book about a train.
Yeah, because
and destiny, everything has to connect.
Yeah, destiny is working its mysterious things.
And they go so to the city of Ludd.
City of Ludd. And they're in the little town outside. The townsfolk tell them about the war that's throughout the city between the pubes and the other people.
And the Brazilians.
Yeah. Brazilians hate pubes.
The Brazilians take no prisoners.
As the war waxed and waned.
And so they're like, cool, thanks for having us and doing a snack.
But didn't you, like the first time, Nate, I mean, maybe you did the audiobook, I'm sure, right?
Yes.
But like I read that, I was like, maybe that's not pubes. Maybe that's a different word. That's like, of course it's pubes. It's Stephen King. Because earlier on, there's foreshadowing when they're like, we saw graffiti. It said like, pubes are itchy or something like that. And then you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Can't be that. It's like, pubes must die. And I was like, oh. Rock against Bush, all right.
That was Nair's slogan then.
Yeah, it was that.
So they're like, all right, we're going to go into this city. And the people in the town are like, hey, watch out in that city because it's real fucked up there. They're still doing a war. Like, whoever's left, they're just fighting forever. That's all they do now. And the fucking city's full of demons. And demons are bad for you, historically. So watch out because there's nothing good there. But y'all are magic gun people, and you got a badger with you, so you'll probably be fine. So don't worry about that. So they go into the city, and of course, since it's a Stephen King book, the first thing that happens is the kid is kidnapped to be raped.
They do set it up ahead of time. They're like, there are some people out there, and they would, you know, they'll rape a lady for sure. but a kid is what they'll really want. And you're like, oh, gross. And they're like, because they could train him to be like a Hamas fighter. And you're like, oh, okay. I guess that's less by bad. But it's by fucking. It's, oh, like the Spartans. Okay, got it.
So, yeah, he gets kidnapped by a guy who is melting, apparently. He's just oozing.
It's the melt guy from Action League Now.
Yeah. Except it's like, if instead of the melt guy just being melty, he's got like level 9 syphilis, where he's mostly pustules.
Herpes simplex 17.
Yeah. It's not even simplex anymore. It's like complex.
Complex. I think we've made that joke.
Multiplex. Multiplex.
Yeah. Now playing.
He's got so many herpes. Yeah. So they're like, all right, they took the kid away. Jake's been taken by the oozing pedophile. I should have known that. That's why I don't come to the city anymore. And then
the traffic is terrible.
The traffic, nothing good ever happens on the bridge. Usually it's not an oozing pedophile.
Worst things are about to happen under that bridge.
So the guy is like, if you come after me, I'll throw this grenade and I'll blow us all up and the kid. So they let him run for a few seconds. And then Roland and the Badger, whose name is Oi because he's Jewish.
These table scraps are kosher, right?
They go after him, and he's like, you two, Eddie and Susanna, you guys got to go find the train. He's like, what does that even mean? He's like, I don't know. You'll figure it out when you get there. That's how this whole series works. You figure it out along the way. Just wing it. Fucking do it live. And so they do. And so, once again, the path splits, and you're getting the story of Roland chasing the pedophile man, whoever, I forget his fucking name, doesn't matter.
Was he the TikTok man?
No, TikTok man is where they're going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's oozing, and they're running through the streets, and like running through Gasher. The secret tunnels.
It was Gasher, right?
Oh, it was Gasher, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not into Gash.
Yeah.
Like, ew.
The name's ironic. Into Boy Gash, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, no. I like that butt pussy. Like,
yeah, he's going to rape the kid. Yeah. And then, so while they're doing that, Eddie and Susanna are running through the city looking for a train. And they get attacked by a little kid. And they're like, what's this little kid? He's like, just kidding. It's not a kid. It's a mutant dwarf. And he's dressed like an old jester or like an old-timey Victorian.
What was that shitty movie where they adopt the girl, but she turns out to be an evil dwarf? Orphan?
Yeah. She wasn't a dwarf. She was just, small.
Come on.
She wasn't that. No, she's like a regular-sized person.
But in the, she's like a little person. It's not.
No. She's a regular-sized girl.
What?
Yeah.
Are you talking about real life now? What the fuck has just happened?
I mean, in the movie, she's a regular-sized I mean, she's short, but she's not by any means a little person.
She's supposed to be 8 years old. How big is an 8 year old?
I don't think she's supposed to be 8. I think she's supposed to be like 12 or 13.
I can't believe I'm going to look this up.
Also, Nate, they made a second one.
Oh, no.
And she still looks exactly like a child, even though it's been 10 years. The girl in real life just looks weirdly young. That's why, like, let's make a creepy movie about this creepy chick.
I think it's based on, there's like been some weird stories.
It was based loosely on like a story. I don't think in real life that she killed anybody. She was just like, I don't want to get a job, so I'm going to pretend to be a kid.
She was supposed to be a fucking 9-year-old girl. This is based loosely on life in Romania. That's what this entire fucking movie
Not
was.
Not even like a specific one, just life in Romania. That's what people do there. Loosely based on an average about? Romanian day.
Nate, do you know this movie?
I do not.
Of course not.
Yeah.
It is a complete pile of shit. It wasn't. Do you know Leonardo DiCaprio was a producer for it, though?
You know, he likes him
young.
Give her
3 years, she'll be old enough.
When did this come out?
2009.
10, 15 years ago?
Exactly. Where the family adopts a child, a young girl, and she's really weird and, in that horror movie kind of way where they're like, is she just a weird kid or is something different happening? And then it turns out that it's actually like a 30-year-old woman who just looks like a child like goes through different foster families and robs and murders and has sex with the husbands and shit like that.
That's why you should not go to Romania.
I'm telling you, it's either, if it's not Romania, it's Albania. It's one of those If I learned anything from the Mister, this is what life in Albania is like.
Yeah, well, that's also because people are married at 13 because they're dead by 17.
Well, that's when your father's able to raise the funds for your chicken dowry.
It's a goat dowry, Mike. Get it right.
When you marry,
only the finest 16-year-old girls are worth a goat. What was his name? Fizbo?
His name was Anatoly, but you said Blordgat, and that was one of my favorite things ever.
That
book was so fucking stupid.
He tried to get in my vagina.
Is that like a tiny vagina?
It's a new country. Yeah, she is in the movie, she's a 33-year-old woman from Estonia. I wasn't far off.
Yeah.
It's a shithole nation. Come on. We have patrons from Estonia.
It's more Baltic than Balkan, but you know, same idea.
Yeah, putting the balls in either one.
The balls.
Nate, you have homework to watch this movie, but you really shouldn't. It's a pile of shit. But just check it out when you're bored. You have nothing else. Come on. Watch it while you listen to the next audiobook.
The House on Mango Street.
So they're doing their thing. Roland's chasing them, and Eddie and Susanna are killing dozens of people who are just partying by doing murder because they've all lost their minds and they just like to kill everybody all the time. And also, they think that the public service announcement recordings are the voice of a god, and they have to appease those gods by massacring everybody because Thunderdome is real.
Eddie hears, like, drumming, and it turns out it's the drum beat to Velcro Fly by ZZ Top.
It was either that or it was going to be the beginning of More Than a Feeling by B.J. Thomas.
You know, if you had to hear the same ZZ Top song over and over again for hundreds of years, you would probably be killing people out of despair also.
But it's a random ZZ Top song. I looked it up. I was like, is that a real song? Because I don't know the song Velcro Fly. I looked it up and I thought these two things were very funny to me. One was kind of just about how different music was back in the 80s. Velcro Fly was the fourth single off of their album, that album. There were like 9 songs on the album. They're like, these are all radio ready songs about.
If you count them one at a time, they're all singles.
They're all ready to go, half entendres.
It was actually a double album.
And the other thing I thought was really funny is that on the single, there's an album version, which is 3.5 minutes, a single version, which is under 3 minutes, where they cut out some of the ha, 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 ha part, probably. And then for a reason that nobody should ever enjoy, there's a 6-minute and 40-second version of the song.
But the extra time is all ha-ha-ha's.
It's all ha-ha-ha's, yeah. Just the ha-ha-ha remix.
It's probably 3 minutes of guitar solo, actually.
The original song
is 2 minutes, 30 seconds, and then they added 4.5 minutes of guitar solo.
I believe it.
Anyway, so what happens next? So this part of the book, I literally could not tell you what happens. I just...
Eddie and Susanna kill everybody, and then they get the last two people to take them to the train. Like, we'll kill you if you don't take us to the train. It's like, you don't want to go to the train, man. That train's evil. It'll kill you. And it's like, that's fine. We'll take our chances. And so they go to the train, and then, like, here's the train. And then they wait, because they have to wait for Roland to get the kid. So it jumps back to Roland. And Gasher, the kid fucker, has taken Jake into a little bunker room with the TikTok man.
Who's just doing an obnoxious dance and filming it over and over again.
He's got the stupid haircut, yeah. And what the fuck was he talking about? TikTok man was like, I want to control all the computers in this city because then I'll be real, real strong and then I can kill everybody because he likes killing people because he's a real dickhead. But that doesn't really work so good because the Badger spies on them and then Roland kills everybody.
And the TikTok man is like, Jake, tell me everything you know about something, something, something processors. And Jake is like, I don't know.
I'm 11.
I'm from 1977. I don't know anything about this. Is it an Atari? Does it play Pong? Like, that's all they had. So, like, why would he know anything? Of course, not the TikTok man would know that, but anyways. And then somehow he dies.
Roland kills everybody with his guns. Yeah. He shoots everybody to death because that's what he does. That's kind of his thing. And he takes Jake out of there, and he's like, let's go find the train. And so...
I choose you.
Yeah, he does.
And this is somehow the train from the book that Jake bought back in the like first half.
It's Blaine the Train.
David Blaine the Train. It sits in a block of ice for 40 days in Times Square.
Yes. Also, it eats its own head.
It is. Because he knows it. They're like, they're used to being, when they're at the picnic with the very old people in whatever old town was called, Crud. And they're like, oh, there's a train. And he's like, was it called Blaine? And they're like, yeah, how'd you know? And it's a monorail. And all I could think about was the fucking Simpsons episode. It's like, that's a Shelbyville kind of thing. Remember that episode of The Simpsons?
I know this episode exists because I hear it mentioned all the time, but I have not seen it.
Oh, it was with Phil Hartman. It was
like Conan O'Brien wrote it or something?
Yeah, it's from like season 4 or 5. It's very early when real Simpson nerds are like, that was the peak. That kind of was 30 years ago, dude.
The additional 25 years, I've really just been calling it in.
I kind of have. But yeah, I remember that episode. Shelby, and he comes into the town. I have a great idea. Actually, no, it's more of a Shelbyville idea.
But they have to talk to Blaine because they need to take the train, and that rhymes.
Yeah, it's insane.
And he's got to follow because the train path follows the beam. And the problem is that Shart Dick the Bear, who's breaking down, Blaine is also breaking down. He's lost his mind, and he fucking loves riddles. Loves them. Can't get enough. And the other train killed herself. So it's just Blaine left. Can't take what her other name was, like Patricia or something was her name, which doesn't rhyme, which is why she killed herself. She felt silly. Could have gone with Elaine. What's wrong with you? And so she's dead. She drove herself off the tracks, and now they gotta get to Blaine, and he's just like, please keep giving me riddles. And they're like, okay. So they get on the train. He's
hopefully
like,
hopefully one of our characters bought a book of riddles earlier in the book.
Well, yeah, because they all earlier Roland was talking about how important riddles were in his world, and they have big riddle contests. And
it's the Hobbit. Well, because that's
not TV anymore.
That's definitely a little nod to the Hobbit, which was one of the inspirations for this book.
Oh yeah, this was
Lord of the Rings.
This is Western and Lord of the Rings, and you know. Demon fucking Lord of the Rings.
And one of the riddles is that, like, you know, what is a head in a bed but is not a person? Isn't that one of the riddles from The Hobbit?
What has a head but no body? It's a river. But then the guy's like, it's two things. And I feel like, I don't care anymore. I run, but I don't go anywhere. A river.
God. What is black and white and red all over? Oh, God.
Bloody nun. But Eddie keeps pissing everybody off by asking his stupid jokes, like, why? He keeps telling dead baby jokes. Everybody's like, dude, you got to chill. These aren't riddles. Like, these are the only riddles I know. So they get on the train, and the train's like, actually, joke's on you. I'm going to kill us all because we're going to go there, but I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to crash into everything. I'm going to explode and kill everybody. And they're like, what if we tell you a riddle you can't solve? It's like, oh, God, the thought of it just makes me hard. Okay, if you tell me a riddle that I can't solve, then I won't kill us all. But otherwise, I'm going to kill us all. In Topeka, which is the worst place to die because it means you've been to Topeka.
And they're like, what has 4 wheels and flies? And it's like a garbage truck. And like, God damn it.
they can tell infinite riddles. They don't have to just like pick a good one. And the first part of the next book will be a lot of riddles.
Oh, and fuck you. I don't want to do any more of this.
Oh, it's a truly beautiful scene.
Jesus Christ.
So that happens. They're getting on the train. They're like, good luck, everybody. Meanwhile, the best named character in the book shows up in the TikTok man's lair. TikTok man is not dead. He's just been shot a bunch. And he's like, ow, I hurt. All the bullets hurt me. Oh, no. And then Richard Fannin, who is just the man in black once again in a new iteration, he's just like, hey, I need an assistant. And the guy's like, okay, let's go do that. I like to kill people. Now, do you know why his name is Richard Fannin?
Because he's fanning the flames. I don't fucking care.
No, because Richard Dick, oh, he's Dick Fannin, Fannin, fan spin, meat spin.
Shit. You know what? I can't prove that that's not true.
If it was anyone but Stephen King, I would know it wasn't true. But so Stephen King predicted meat spin.
Meat spin exists in this universe. In
the, oh, absolutely.
The, that exists. Is the Dark Tower, actually. Is
that's what tower, caused the war.
Tower keeps spinning. So meat spins back, and they're on the riddle train, and it's the end of the book. And you're like, okay,
wait, this is so a thing. Are you saying the train riddles haven't happened yet?
Oh no, they have to have all the train riddles first. It's not a big part of the next book. It's just like the beginning. It's the opening scene. It's like the thing before the title credits.
Mm. Why?
The prologue. It's pretty dumb, but fun. The next book though is you'll either love it, you'll either not mind this or you'll hate it even more because after the train. They leave the story entirely, and Roland tells them about his childhood for the entire book. And it's one story.
And it's at 800 pages?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not bad, but it's not really this plot at all. It's like, let me tell you about a weird thing I did when I was a kid for a whole book. And you're like, oh, fuck, all right, fine.
But they were mistaken, for a second ring had been made. And like, oh, fuck you, Roland. why does that exist? Why? Why does Stephen King do these things?
Is it necessary to read the next book?
I don't think it's necessary
to
read this one.
Just a story from Roland's. Yeah, okay. Necessary to understand the future books.
I don't remember, but I mean, it's a pretty good story. If you think of it as like a one-off, like just, you know, extended universe thing, it's one of the better ones of the series. But
I'm going to just say, I don't think it was necessary to read the previous two books to really understand this one, because it's just like, all right, weird shit's happening. If you could start from there, I bet you could start at the last book. If you're just like, weird shit's happening, and you don't need to think about why, you know what?
Honestly,
you could even start afterwards. You could start after the last book. Just don't read any of them. And just be like, wow, that was
final,
a thing.
The final book, by the end of it, a lot of the previous stuff, no, it doesn't apply, but things are so weird that it's not that it didn't matter because it's part of the story, but it's different and it's very strange. And you'll be like, what the fuck? So, yeah.
Oh, I can imagine that. Again, Stephen King had no plan. And I got to admire that level of balls. But I want to in the beginning of this book, he wrote this long introduction, and I read some of it before I got sick of him. And there were two things that stuck out to me. One was this passage where I was like, this is the kind of writing I hate from Stephen King. And the second part was, what an asshole. Because he says, I want to write an epic like Lord of the Rings, but I want it to be a Western. You're like, cool idea. And instead of going like, what's that story? He just goes, chapter one. And he just started typing. And then he's like, that seems like a good place to stop. I'll pick that up later. That's not how you write a fucking epic story.
Well, he wrote the first four or five, and then he stopped for like 10 years, and he didn't pick it up again until after he got hit by that car.
I feel like Wizard and Glass came out in the 2000s, or maybe the late 90s, because so it was 6 years between the one we just read and book four.
And I remember, between four and five is what?
Is that Wolves of the Cala, or is that Wind Through the Keyhole?
Wolves of the Cala is number five.
Okay, Wolves of the Cala.
Wind of the Keyhole is an offshoot. It's book four and a half. That's not. Okay. He did that afterwards. That was a nothing.
Wolves of the Cala is 2003.
Yeah, so there's like 9 years there too, or eight.
Then he went going. Then he like the next 2004. Oh my God, he put out book six and seven in 2004.
What the fuck? In between four and five, he took a long break, and then he got hit by that car, and he's like, "I'd better finish this book in case I die." That's literally what it was. He's like, if I fucking die, like, you know, that would suck. Better bang these out. And so he railed a pile of cocaine and wrote three books.
I just feel like, I mean, yeah, that is a way to write a epic story because he did it. You know, he typed it and it made sense and he somehow made it work. But that is a ridiculous way to say, I want to write a 4,000-page series. Let me just start and see where I go. That just seems so ridiculous.
I mean,
to me.
Feel like we have this every discussion time, every time we talk about Stephen King. Some authors do that. Some shouldn't.
But it's never more clear than when you read Stephen King. Because he was reading this and he was like, didn't
what
I
if
say
the train really loved riddles?
Sure. 600 pages ago, that might matter now. Let me go back and look at that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I killed that kid under a mountain for some reason. And in the second book, I said, here's the posse we need. Fuck it. Let's bring him back. I can't imagine. I don't know. He's playing five-dimensional chess or something to make that make sense. But here was the passage that I was reading. I was like, man, he sucks. I hate his voice as a writer. It just so much of Stephen King's writing about stuff feels to me very forced. And this is in the introduction where he's like, I was young and I was conceited and I wanted to write a story, but I didn't know yet how, blah, blah, blah.
I feel like it's the same foreword in all of the books.
Maybe.
Because I looked at it, I was like, this looks like the same as the last one. I think he just put the same foreword in
all of it. It may very well be. But this is the passage that I was like, I hate this. He read, the world eventually sends out a mean-ass patrol boy to slow your progress and show you who's boss. You reading this have undoubtedly met yours, or will. I met mine, and I'm sure he'll be back. He's got my address. He's a mean guy, a bad lieutenant, the sworn enemy of goofery, fuckery, pride, ambition, loud music, and all things 19. Am I the only one that thinks that's shitty?
Like, I mean, it's just stylized. I don't know.
But it's like by 800% too much. It just feels like a shirt from Hot Topic. It just feels like too much of him. Like, look how clever I am. I'm going to... Can't just say, you know, life is going to teach you a lesson when you're young and ambitious and you think you know things and you're going to realize you don't know fucking shit. But he has to have a whole paragraph. He's a bad lieutenant. He's a bad mofo. He's going to kick you in the gonads. And he goes on and on and on. And I was like, this is exactly the kind of stuff that I read in Stephen King's books that I hate. Nate? No?
I think that would be my argument that it's not forced because that's how he always writes.
So book three was somehow less ridiculous than book two, mainly because it wasn't the dumb Detta Odetta thing in book two was just... so absurd and was toned down a lot in this, although the character does make a reappearance, but it wasn't like the entire fucking book. But yet for this book, I mostly just didn't care. Also couldn't follow what was happening at the end, but also just didn't really like, I just didn't care. It was like, I is something important going to happen now? Maybe, I guess. But I just didn't care.
So well, there's only really three more. So it was four more, yeah.
Only four more. Well, it's gonna be a slog.
Not even halfway.
I don't wanna do it, but we're gonna have to.
Yeah, we average one every year and a half or so we got time. And I'll make you guys do it, so ha ha ha.
Yeah, these would be great punishment books. I would be almost as upset if you gave us Wizard in Glass for fucking Christmas as when you gave us Ulysses.
Well, I don't need to because we have to read it anyway, so.
No, can't we veto Nate? Can't we do something about this?
I did find out yesterday that the punishment
book
him I
off
have
the island?
In mind, I can't do because it's the book is longer than all of the Lord of the Rings plus The Hobbit.
I don't think that's a rule. I think that's
I don't want to read that.
I have a good candidate for punishment book too. And I was like, oh, who recommended
it? Still
it?
Battlefield Earth. Watch out, Jimmy.
I got a good one on deck. That's my candidate. Very excited.
Well, this one's done. I liked it, but I knew you guys wouldn't. But four more of the same is ahead. So,
and they just get longer. They just
yeah, a little bit. They don't get massively longer, but pretty close.
I remember seeing Wizard. I don't know why we had that in my house. My dad didn't read anything, but we had a copy of Wizard in Glass. Mm. And it was like the size of a fucking cinder block, that book.
Wizard of Glass, at least, has like a story going for it. Wolves of the Cala is extraordinarily long, and most of the book is waiting.
Stealing has to be stopped. Yes, man. Well, thank you, patrons, for selecting this. You could have picked a much shorter and much shittier book from the Divergent series.
Was it that much shorter?
It's faster.
Hmm.
Well, I forgot what the other choice was, but we'll get to it eventually.
We'll get to them all eventually.
Or we die.
All of them.
That's or the we'll only die. Escape yeah. from this prison.
I hope soon.
All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter. But you should most importantly head over to patreon.com to support the podcast before Jimmy could kill himself to avoid reading the other terrible books we have to read.
There's so many.
We can't let him escape. He has to pay penance like a person in a myth. He has to keep reading these stories.
And you can also find us on Instagram and tell us things you want us to read, and we might read them. Maybe. Depends if you give us money or not. Okay. But also if we want to do it or if we're bored.
We are looking. We're always looking for submissions because
we don't know all the deep cuts of the terrible things out there. And we hate reading a lot of things, but it's fun to make fun of them. So, you know, if you got some cool tips and tricks, go on over to Goodreads and join us there for our lively book discussions that happen once in a blue moon. And
you could start the next one.
Do that. Start it and tell us things to read there that are good or bad or neither or both.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.